should probably go with this crowd anyways until Jim gets here. That way the fans at home can at least see what true beauty looks like before the ugly guy shows up.
That's true.
And now that we're live, we should just formally say happy birthday to Mike.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Thank you very much.
38 again. You're doing great.
Yeah. Well, no, I've always said I celebrate anniversaries of my 21st birthday.
That's great.
I've done that for years.
Awesome tactic. Awesome tactic.
I'm getting close to my golden. Like I'm getting close to my golden anniversary on that one too. So.
That's great.
So that's fun. How's everybody been? Ray, how's your last few events go for you?
Good. I feel like I haven't been on in a little while.
We haven't done one for a while. No, so
yeah,
apologies to everybody out there.
It's been a busy couple months, just managing all the things, life and work and being a dad and playing pool a little bit here and there. So constructive, you know, had some good wins and some good positive outcomes from a few different things. Marching on.
What's your schedule going forward when it comes to serious events?
There is a World Nine Ball Tour event next month in Virginia that I'll be competing in, like a local regional thing. And I just got word of one of the first U.S. Open qualifiers that are coming up that'll actually be here in Florida. So I kind of have that bookmark that hasn't been announced yet, but I'm going to be going to that, I think, in June. Hopefully we start getting more details about U.S. Open qualifiers. I think Frank Maialetti in the Philadelphia area, he's having a big event that might also be a qualifier as well. I'm starting to target those because I wanna go to the U.S. Open for sure.
Yeah.
And so right now, you know, it's kind of like waiting to see what happens with those. There's a bunch of other ranking events that are on the calendar that I'm going to try and go to that should fit my schedule okay. Like there's one in Seattle, I think, in September, and a few others around the country that I'm probably going to go to, maybe to Oscars in California.
Wow. And
Frank's in Philadelphia. So I'm targeting all the smaller regional ones. I think once the qualifier thing kind of gets more fleshed out, you know, next season I probably will target the majors more and play less of the regional events and then just shape my time around trying to get to qualifiers until I can get a tour card. So that's going to be the plan.
Yeah. Okay. Good deal.
Mike.
Sir.
I need information.
Information.
Hall of Fame. What's going on? Talk to us.
The Hall of Fame.
Shane's in. We are.
Yeah, Shane's going to be the Hall of Fame winner this year.
Wow. He's got an outside chance.
We're working now on getting the ballot put together and getting it out as soon as possible. And there's a couple reasons for that. You know, the assumption is that Shane will be, you know, inducted this year, right? So, we're not sure about where we're having the banquet this year. There are a couple of options, one being the Moscone Cup and the other being the International.
Florida, baby. It's Florida's year. Let's go.
Which are both going to be in Florida. And so, you know, I think it's important for us to be able to let them market the event knowing who's going to be inducted. So, you know, especially in the situation like a match room, where if we did it there, it would be very nice if they were able to market with their ticket sales, especially their VIP packages, that, you know, there's also this banquet's going to be held with Shane Van Boney's induction, you know, something like that. So it was just a matter of trying to get all those kind of things lined and, you know, aligned at the same time. So yes, long and short of it is, ballot should be coming your way in, you know, a week or so.
I'm excited. I think Shane, I haven't decided yet if I'm going to vote for Shane. I think he's got to do at least one more win before now, before he gets my vote. But
it's an interesting year because you've also got
Carlo Beato, Guy Young Kim.
Beato's eligible this year. Guy Young Kim is eligible this year. So, you know, are either of them going to, you know, get selected ahead of Shane? No. But could two players get elected in the same year? It's possible. It takes a lot. It takes 75% of the vote. You know, both players would have to get 75% or be named on 75% or more ballots. And that's very, you know, it's happened once before with Allison and Johnny Archer in the same year. But other than that, you know, it's tough. You know, there's most years where players don't, you know, there's been years where the winner hasn't been 75%. So
it's a tough Hall of Fame to get into.
It's going to be 90% plus this year, I promise you.
Now, just out of curiosity, Mike, I doubt you know the number off the top of your head, but there are how many active voters for the Hall of Fame?
I think 52, if you include the living Hall of Famers.
And then how many of those 52 vote actively?
You know, it's usually in the it's more like 60 voters. We usually get around 50 votes.
Okay,
about 50 voters, and it's closer to 60, you know, total voters
with the living Hall.
It's actually a good return.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a good return. I mean, you know, I'll be honest with you. There's years where I have to badger people and track them down, but it's, you know, it's important that they vote. I mean, if you're in a position where you have that voting privilege and something like this, I think you owe it to, you know, the people who are on the ballot to give it an effort. And the ones that, you know, not surprisingly, the ones we have to chase down the most are the living Hall of Famers. So then it's always hit them with the guilt trip of, listen, you got into this Hall of Fame by people voting for you. You owe it to these people on this list to, you know, share your thoughts on which of your contemporaries you think needs, you know, should join you. So that usually works.
Well, you won't have to chase me down, promise.
No, the USPNA members are usually the you know, they're very responsive, which is great. I mean, that's so.
Out of pure curiosity, what's the criteria for being able to vote?
Being able to vote, if you're a living Hall of Famer, obviously. And then there's a the group, the U.S. Billiard Media Association, which isn't really just U.S. based people, but so. We invite people to be in the association if enough people, you know, on the existing USBMA feel that they kind of fit the parameters, which are kind of loose, but it's basically, listen, if you're involved in covering the sport and you've been doing it for any length of time and have respect around the community as being someone responsible and knowledgeable about, you know, or great players and who've helped the game and things like that, then you know, we would like you to be part of the USBMA.
Okay.
So and then there's another category called Friends of the Game, which kind of includes historians and promoters who also have a good perspective on you know, who's helped shape the game.
Yeah, I was making sure you were going to cover that. So. I don't know. Ray, Bob, do you have any other questions for the Hall of Fame?
Not really. It's gonna be Shane, I guess. So it should
be. He'll be one for sure.
Seems super, super difficult not to have Carlo Beato in, but maybe Carlo Beato doesn't want to get in.
Well, yeah.
And I mean, Guy Young Kim, too. Maybe he doesn't want to get in this year because he wants to have his own year.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's you know, do you and what happens if it's at Moscone Cup instead of the international, right?
You're the opening act.
Does Carlo Beato fly from the Philippines to Florida for one night, turn around, go home, or sit around for a couple of days and watch Europeans play Americans in pool?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of those situations where it's like, do you want to be the opening act for Shane too? Because you know that everybody's there for Shane.
Yeah.
Or do you want to have your own year potentially? Yeah.
Yeah, Carlo Beato, you think, has got, you know, a pretty decent chance of getting into Hall of Fame. And so it doesn't matter which year.
He's a promising up and comer. He might be someone someday.
How long did it take Parika to get in?
long time. He was on the ballot for many years. If you are on the ballot and do not get elected by the time you're 60, you fall off the ballot, and then you go into a separate pool for every other year. We talk about veteran players, you know, players from either pre-Hall of Fame days and dead for 100 years, or more current players who just didn't get elected through the normal process. And there's a committee that reviews those and says, well, it looks like we missed the boat here. This guy clearly should have been in, like a Parikka. Parikka got in that way.
Right. So yeah. He's one of the greats, and it can happen, you know.
Yeah, yeah. As far as I will respond, if you don't mind, to Aaron Blake about associations nominating people to vote. You know, the whole thing with Halls of Fame, in a lot of cases, if you look at other sports Hall of Fames, it's usually people who are independent and don't, you know, have a direct affiliation with a group or a team or a player or whatever. And journalists have always been kind of, media has always been that kind of, looked upon as that kind of voter. So once you start getting into associations, it gets a little bit funny on the independence and the credibility of the voter, if that makes sense.
In soccer, I understand the idea, but in soccer, for example, which is very popular in Europe, obviously, it's different. There, the let me see that I'm having it right. All coaches get a vote, I think, of all soccer teams. Hey, Jim.
Yeah. So, you know, you always worry about it becoming a popularity contest. You know, in golf, there's automatic qualification. If you win X number of tournaments or X number of majors or whatever, you're automatically in the Hall of Fame. I hate that. I like it to be a more, you know, I like voters, you know, which in most sports, at least in the U.S., professional football, professional baseball, professional basketball, that's the way it's done. So that's the way we structured. That's why we convinced the BCA to allow us to structure the Hall of Fame voting, because in the old days, it was just the BCA board of directors who would sit in a room and decide who was going to be in the Hall of Fame during one of their board meetings. And then it was really a popularity contest, and you know, you lose credibility. And if you're going to have a Hall of Fame in a sport, you want the fans to think of it as something that's credible.
Yeah.
I think, Jim, it's probably.
Speaking of Hall of Famers.
There you go.
I'm ready.
The Moscone Cup fan Hall of Fame right there.
That's right.
There should be a fans Hall of Fame. Yeah.
The Railbird Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Yeah. Just as all, listen, as long as I've got my my seat already reserved right front and center for Shane Van Boning's Hall of Fame this year.
Well, you won't be front and center, I guarantee you that.
Yeah, so it's just in the room.
It's usually family. It's usually like family front and center.
Yeah, okay, but yeah.
But we'll get you a good seat.
Can I have a good seat too? Can I sit with Jimbo? I
want to sit with Jimbo. See, that's what I mean. That's not a good seat if I have to sit beside Nate.
I want to sit by Jimbo. Jimbo and I are friends. He's turning into a shit Robin for me.
My night.
He's turning into a shit Robin for me.
I'm a busy man.
He's a busy man. That's what he is.
Yeah, you started early. You said half past.
Tournaments. He's winning tournaments. What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing, Nate? Yeah, I'm out there winning national titles.
You're just sitting around cutting them down.
You're sitting around letting your hair grow, so you have to wear a hat for a podcast.
No, I just haven't showered in a week.
Well, there you go.
It's been too busy, you know. Hey,
that's the reason he doesn't want to sit with you.
How was my hat? This is shadow tight. This is Mika Immonen's line. Give a shout out to Mika Immonen. He's looking like his chemo worked. It looks like he's got a real good chance of being cancer free. Pretty awesome.
I watched Mika at the expo just warming up, and I watched him just get down and hit some balls, and I was like, God, this guy is so talented. Like, he just looked right, you know, like there was never a beat that was missed from last year till now. And he just was, you know, good flow and like hitting balls crisp and, you know, like no lag at all. And I was like, man, this guy's such a fighter.
So I think you probably get back to the table with a little more, focus and purpose.
Like
you've been given a second chance, right?
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, him and Darren, right?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, talking of second chances, there's Darren just snapped off his first title since he had his health issues.
Yeah.
That's
good to see as well.
As soon as they posted those ads, I was like, boy, Darren at 9-1 looks like.
Listen, 9-1 on any 8-ball tournament is just silly.
But for him to be 9-1, I mean, he's he and Melling were definitely, he should have
been. That's what I mean.
They should have been like, they both should have been like 4-1.
Yeah, I don't think there's a field. You could take every single, all the best player, but 8-ball players in the world and put them together in a field, and Darren Appel is still not 9-1 win that tournament.
Sure.
he's awesome. Well, I didn't even see the odds. I just saw the names. I'm like, well, Darren's on my short list of like one or two guys that I would look at right away, just from knowledge base. And then, you know, he's playing on a bar table. So it's like, and he's hitting the ball well. Like I saw him at Super Billiards Expo, hitting the ball well and fighting and playing good. And so I'm just like,
smashed FSR, right? Like 9-1 or something like that.
It was a close
11-9. I think he beat him
11-9. I think it was. It was 11-9.
He beats was it, who did he play first round in the final 16 then? Was that, I'm thinking he beat somebody like 11-1.
What are we talking about? The Expo?
I can't remember the bracket.
I don't remember,
but he was playing really well and hitting the ball good and looked energy was good. So seeing that list, I was like, well, Darren's playing like Darren plays, and this 8-ball tournament should really favor him. And he stuck with it, showed he's a champion. So congrats to him for sure.
Mike, for sure. What did you think about bar table 8-ball? Did you watch much of it?
I did not watch a lot of it. I did see that. It was exciting. It was fun. It had a little twist. I'm not a big fan of. I mean, I think bar table 8-balls is cool. I'm just not a big fan of it as far as following it a professional part of pool. So, but it was certainly fun.
I think it's my favorite game to watch, bar table 8-ball. It's too congested. I mean, you really get to see a lot of breakouts. You get to see a lot of pattern play. I would like to see the pockets tighten up. I think there were 4.5-inch pockets. I think those pockets needed to be a little bit smaller. But I like bar table 8-ball. There's not a lot of windows. There's not a lot of lines between up and down table. I mean, you really got to have a tight cue ball. And I think it's really fun to watch how the players play their patterns.
It's entertaining. It certainly shows a lot of skill. It's just not to me where I think professional level pool should be.
I think I watched a little bit of it and I found myself like having fun watching it just because of how ridiculous some of the 15-second shot clock. You know how dumb, like I watch guys like really feeling the heat of the clock and they're just doing certain things that you would on an 8-ball table, you would just say, this is brain dead. This is like no IQ. We're just going, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a novelty to that. That's like entertaining, but I think there is some strategy too. There's some little subtle nuances too to the English rules that are a little bit different than like American pool. So it's kind of cool to see where those come up, but it's also cool to see positions where like you see guys that have like actual tactical knowledge and something like a one pocket developing patterns and opening things up in certain ways. And some of the announcers were, clueless to some of that, but then you see it and you're like, oh, that's really intelligent. But that 15-second gun is like, man, it's like so brutal. And it's like what I didn't like about some of the stuff was what the commentators were like, oh, this is an easy out. This is they're just glossing over the fact that you're on a 15-second shot clock. Even though the table size is smaller, the pocket size is the same. So you better be careful with your cue ball because like we saw what happened with Tyler, like he made a really crucial scratch and that cue ball is really, I mean, it's everything. When you only have 15 seconds to shoot, it's like it's hard to really map everything out and kind of really control things. But it's fun to see it kind of see the different strategies and different things, how they work. So it was definitely entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Yeah.
I think that's the idea of it. Also, it's
yeah.
it's fun to watch, but I also agree with Mike, like, it's entertainment, it's kind of gimmicky, it's nice to watch, but it's nothing to build professional pool on. It's just
I don't think that that's what the, you know, the battle plan is anyway.
No, of course.
So you know, it is what it is, and you take it for what it is, and that makes it, to me, easier to like than if it was trying to be positioned as Carl Boyes likes to say, hashtag 8-ball takeover. I mean, at that point, no, I wouldn't want to see, you know, our pros selling pool by running around the table, you know, like they're late for dinner. So
Earl Strickland special.
I'm sorry?
No side, Earl Strickland special.
Yeah, God.
10-second shot clock and no side pockets.
That
him running around a 7-foot table with a 9-foot cue is kind of.
Eight ball is like the, you know, globally the most recognized game, probably. You know,
It's always been the argument for it.
Sure.
I mean, that's why the IPT was 8-ball, all that. But you know, at some point, pool just kind of has had to put its eggs in one basket and carry that basket on, and it's not 8-ball.
I mean, ironically, it's the world's most recognized game, but it's also the world's most complex set of rules, right? I mean, how many different sets of 8-ball have you played in your life?
Yeah.
How many different sets of 8-ball have you played in the last month?
Yeah, right.
It's the easiest to identify, but it's the hardest to understand. Where 9-ball is very easy to understand.
You know that America is the only country where it's difficult to understand. Everywhere else in the world is very easy to understand. We've used the same set of rules since the game started. I think I've played two different sets of 8-ball rules, and one of them is the English 8-ball, and one of them is the American. That's it. Yeah. That's the only two rules I've ever played.
English BCA.
In America, there was no arbiter for what the rules were. It was like, you know, I have a league, I have a system, I have this. These are my rules.
I'd love from different bar to bars.
I'd love to see the English 8-ball guys play last pocket 8-ball.
Take what you make, last pocket 8-ball.
Just completely lose their mind. Forget it. They just quit 8-ball altogether. You had to play those rules. Oh my god.
There's an event at the Carom Room in Beloit every Friday. It's take what you make, bank the 8-ball.
Interesting.
It's kind of fun.
And stupid at the same time.
Yes, yes. But that's part of it. It's the gimmicky part of it, right? I don't know. I thought it was really fun to watch.
I've got a good system there. I think it works. I'd agree with Nate. I think the pox have to be smaller. I disagree a little bit with Raymond, what he said about the commentators. The fact is that on those tables, those runouts are easy. But in order to make them not easy, you have to do something, and that's where the 15-second shot clock comes in. If I couldn't watch bar table 8-ball if players were taking 3 minutes every single shot. It would just be awful, because on those tables with 4.5-inch pockets, it is just shooty in with your eyes closed. It's stupid but game.
Bar table 8-ball is a lot. I think that bar table 8-ball is a harder game than big table 8-ball. Just because you're just so much more congested. It's harder to get from one side of the table to the other, and you're going to have more clusters.
Completely disagree. You can play bar table 8-ball without using a rail.
Yeah, it's easier to get beat in bar table 8-ball.
Well, it depends how the table breaks, too. I mean, if the table isn't – like, if you go back to, like, the Predator event, the World 8-ball, if the table's breaking like that, that's significantly easier. On a bar table than it is a big table, I think. I mean, all the players were doing there was just smashing the rack as hard as they could, breaking dry, and their opponents were running out because everything was wide open. At least with the bar tables, there's still congestion. You still have to run into balls. You still have to break clusters. You still have to play tight patterns.
I think you're more likely to run a 6 or a 7 on a bar table than you are on a 9-footer. But even with some of the clusters, but. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a fun game. I think it's.
It is fun, and the not so much the shot clock. The shot clock, the match clock that makes it interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
The match that, court rather than the shot clock. I mean, the shot clock, you can do it awesome. You can make it 20, you can make it 30, but it's the match clock to know that you've got yourself like 3-frame lead, alternate break. You know there's like 8 minutes left on the match clock. You can start playing a bit tactically and a bit, you know.
Somebody made a funny comment. They're like, it's ironic that in speed pool, it becomes like tactically appropriate to play slow, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but not necessarily slow, but like you're saying, drag it out a little bit, play more defense.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Wait till the beeps to play your shots. Trying to, and you're also trying to calculate it so as to make sure that maybe you can give 2 frames away, but the third one's never going to be possible. You know?
Sure. Yeah.
It's there's a lot that comes into it. And there's some players watching the ultimate pool on the English, on the English table. There's some players that are very, very good at it, and others that have tried and made a complete mess up of it and left themselves too short a time themselves. And it gets quite entertaining. But yeah, I think if there's any future in the ultimate America, then I would like to see them tighten on the pockets. That's the only thing I would say. I think the rest of it is fine. I watched just now when I was just getting Lily ready for bed. I had it on Facebook and I was watching Billy Thorpe playing, and he played a cutback short rail bank, and he hit the long rail just underneath the middle pocket. And it sat in the pocket, it almost dropped. I mean, this is that for me, when you're banking a ball you're only banking a ball 7 foot and you're still hitting the long rail just underneath the side pocket and almost making it. I mean, that's stupid to me. That's what makes them operate.
That's proper pool, buddy. That's proper pool.
That's what makes me switch off. That's what makes me switch off and think this is.
So, Mike, you've seen a lot of these different types of leagues come and go across your time. IPT, don't even need to get into all of them, right? We've seen a million of these things come and go. Do you think this has staying power?
Well, all the leagues that have 90 different rules all have staying power. I mean, they're all still around. They're all still, you know, playing with tens of thousands of members. So people are willing to play different rules. You know, whether or not this has staying power is going to be strictly a matter of, do people like this type of format? And, you know, it's strictly, to me, a tournament format. It's not a league. You're not going to have a league of ultimate pool because it requires too much. It requires too much oversight, you know, in terms of clocks and shot clocks and that time, total time and that kind of thing. So it couldn't be adopted into a league system. So does it have a chance as a tournament system for around the country? I think it has a great chance because it's fun and it's entertaining. And anybody who plays in any of these various eight ball leagues would give that a shot because it's still eight ball. It's just something different than their league has. So everybody loves the challenge of things like that. So I think that tournaments like this, I think they could do, you know, it depends on how it's marketed and pitched around the country. I think it could do very well.
Yeah,
right. Anything you want to add to it?
Am I talking out of my ass or what?
No, I completely agree. I think as far as the eight ball goes, that one's got the most chance of actually becoming something as far as eight ball goes. Because like you said, 8-ball, it's not a game that streamers don't want to stream 8-ball matches because their camera equipment has to be too good, you know? So that's why we don't see so many 8-ball matches streamed. It's very, very difficult. Unless you've got really top-quality lighting and top-quality camera equipment, it just looks like a mess. It's why straight pool very rarely gets streamed properly. It's very difficult to put up a stream for straight pool as well, you know? But if they're willing to do this and they bring their equipment to all the tournaments because they need to have these clocks on every single table, which is not easy to do,
right?
You know, it's not easy to oversee that. If they're willing to do that and they can get together for a tournaments that are 128 or, you know, let's say 32 tables and they can get them all set up to work flawlessly, I think there's definitely a market there for it. Players will want to do it.
One of the things they have going for them is that they're not affiliated to any association or any league, right? So these are just independent tournaments. It's like, oh, here's a fun tournament to play in this weekend. You don't have to worry about whether or not it conflicts with your league membership or you're playing in someone else's league or you have to sign a membership form or anything like that. It's just independent events. So I think it could do really well.
And you, and I mean, you not so much Bob, but the other three, you'd know better than me. I get the impression that finding good quality bar box tables around the country and clubs with good quality is a lot easier than finding good quality 9 foot tables around the country.
Depends completely. Where you're at.
I mean, if I'm just talking about Wisconsin, 9 foot tables, you can't find one, but the bar box tables are everywhere.
Yeah, but if you go to New York City, you can't find a bar table.
Okay.
It just completely depends on where you're at in the country. And California is mostly big table, if I'm not mistaken. New York, Florida's mostly big table, although Florida has a few more bar tables, but it's predominantly big table to my understanding, right?
We have a lot of 8 foot tables too.
That's a strange one. 8 foot tables were made for people whose house just wasn't quite big enough.
Yeah, we have a few pool tables, a few pool rooms that have mostly 8 foot tables. It's weird.
Really?
Yeah,
that's weird.
Yeah,
8 foot is a stupid size of a pool table.
It's the most annoying thing ever. I'd rather see an 11 and a half foot table.
Who's making a noise? Who's like tapping their pen on the table or something?
Bob.
No.
No, it's my. Can you hear that? I'm just tapping my finger. Weird. Sorry, yes, guys.
I've been on mute, so I don't think it was me.
You're such an amateur.
Just look guilty. Bob just looked guilty there. He, when you said that, Bob just went.
Bob.
So what's the latest in the pool world? What do we have going on? Is there anything?
Well, apparently you don't even have to be a pool player now to play in Matchroom events.
What do you mean?
Yeah, you could just be a football player
of American or European style.
Yeah.
There you go.
I've got a question for all four of you. Had any of you ever heard of Troy Deeney before?
No.
Yes.
I mean,
I still haven't heard of him.
All right. And that I'm sure we're going to talk about it, and that will be the crux of my point.
Yeah, he's probably just a regional draw for whoever the footballers are, the fans in the UK.
I have no idea.
I get it. I completely get it. You know, and I could get on board with the snooker players and stuff like that, and trying to attract attention, trying to bring fans in from the snooker side to watch. I can fully understand trying to get fans from other sports, you know, to build up an interest to come and watch. I fully understand. What I don't understand is why him, because unless you're actually from the UK or a massive football fan,
I'm assuming there must have been some kind of reach out from him or somebody. You know, I don't think it was just let's pull a player randomly out of head. There must have been some kind of reaching out.
We're talking about Matchroom are trying to build a world audience. What countries in the world are now going, oh, I'm going to watch that because Troy Deeney, a footballer I've never heard of before in my life, who scored a very famous goal that only people in the UK know about, and has never played international football, never played in the European biggest stage. He's now playing in it. I think I'll go and watch that. Nobody is doing that.
Am I stupid for saying that he's just knows how to play pool? Like, there's got to be some reason. Maybe he's one of the only footballers that knows how to play pool. Right, I mean, it would make
Jim's point is not whether or not he can acquit himself at the pool table as much as it is he's a wild card thing. He's a hook, but he's a hook that nobody's going to get hooked by.
Exactly. It's a hook that isn't appealing to anyone other than maybe some people in the UK.
Maybe that's what they're
working on. Okay, let's try to get more people onto Sky to watch it because we'll just develop. If we can pick up some more fans to just watch the sport and they come watch matches after he's eliminated in two rounds, then we've won.
That indicates to me that he's going to be on the TV table straight away.
100%.
He's going to hit the ball four times and then he's going to be beat 9-0.
Well, he might get the Judd Trump treatment where he gets the weakest player in the field, right?
Yeah, but then you have to seed him. Then you have to seed him, and then you're going another step further. If you put this guy,
you don't have to seed him. You could literally go through all of the seeded players and just like handpick the weakest one that you think on paper and just put him up against him.
He's still going to get absolutely pumped by him. I'll play him for a million.
I would assume so. But that's the thing, right? Like that's the thing, right? So, I mean, if you're going to do the same thing and try to get a boxer involved, it makes sense to go get Manny Pacquiao. One, because not only is he well-known, but he also knows how to play. I just have to assume that this guy can play at some basic level, that he's not like some hacker that doesn't know what gender to use.
I think he's a guy that hit a ball, that probably had a pool table in the recreation room at the football club that he used to play for, kind of thing. Did you see that video that Jason Shaw did when he played against the darts player, Gerwin Price?
No.
And he did a thing, and he played some pool against the dart player, Gerwin Price. Gerwin Price, he could stand over the cue, he could swing the cue back and forward, and he could hit some balls. I'm thinking this is pretty much the level that this Troy Deeney is going to be at.
But that's your assumption, Jim. We don't know.
For all we know, he could play as good as Manny Pacquiao. Yeah. He could play at like a 650, 675 Fargo type of player.
You want to make a bet?
Yeah. I'll bet against 650.
No. I'm not arguing. I'm just saying it's possible that he plays way better than any of us have any idea.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If he does, we'd know by now. Because somebody would know. Somebody within the pool world would have known and would have come up against him and would know that the guy can play, and we'd have already found out about it.
When do we get to see Jason on the soccer pitch? That's what I want to know.
Oh, God. Yeah, right. Please put him in goal.
The only thing I'm saying is that's the only thing that makes sense to me, because I don't know who he is. I still don't know who he is, and I've seen the poster like 35 times. I just have to assume that they're not going out and just getting some random hack who doesn't know which end of the pool cue to use. He's at least got to be an adequate type of player that, you know, maybe could run out an open rack. Maybe. And, you know, Matchroom could end up doing this, the thing where the, you know, who's Joe Schmo, the weakest sponsor, or the weakest seeded player, they're going to happen to draw them, and then they're going to happen to be two players next to him that don't know which end of the queue to use too. And next thing you know, he's like Judd Trump, and he's in the third round of the A side, and every time they're getting 50 million viewers per match.
I don't think that there are really any weak seeded players. Like,
there's weaker players, right?
Yeah,
they're not weak enough to lose to a guy who plays with his mates having a beer.
Well, that's why I kind of brought up Manny.
That's pretty much the level I'm expecting from Troy Deeney. And I might be completely off it. He might be an absolute genius.
Well, that's why I brought up somebody like Manny Pacquiao.
It might be the only reason he never became a professional pool player is because he was offered a multi-million pound soccer contract. Yeah, right. Otherwise, he would have been a pool player.
It's possible.
That's the case. I'm gonna bet with you that that's not the case, but it could well be the case.
But that's the reason why I brought up like a Manny Pacquiao, because Manny Pacquiao could absolutely beat a seeded player if he had a good match and he had a weaker seeded player.
Yeah, but it's not Manny Pacquiao, is it? Well, Manny Pacquiao is all over the internet playing pool. This guy's never been seen playing before. Do you think he really can be that good if nobody's ever seen him play pool before? Of course he's.
I'm hoping.
Probably not.
Jim, I'm assuming you think from a marketing standpoint it would be better to invite Manny Pacquiao to play in the Asian Open.
Or Joe Rogan.
I would imagine that would be an incredibly good marketing employer.
Yeah. Oh, guaranteed he's going to get a spot in the Filipino, whatever.
Absolutely. Or Joe Rogan.
Absolutely, for sure.
And I'd be completely behind that. This one I find difficult to get behind. I hope it has the desired...
But why, though? Because there's a player that's trying to qualify and the spot is missing. What's so...
Well, in the long run, in the long... I understand behind. What you're saying, and that sucks for one person in the short term.
Because I don't see... The value has to outweigh what
exactly.
You're doing.
Yeah.
And I don't think the value outweighs the fact that this guy is taking a place that people are trying to fight.
You're losing one player in the short term, but you might end up increasing the prize funds by $50,000, and next year when that player comes around and does get their chance, they're now have way more, you know, it's about the long haul, right? I understand that you're losing a short-term gain for one player.
That's what I was going to say.
I would like to see, I mean, okay, so Jim, what do you think? Joe Rogan, I'm guessing, is right around a 600 Fargo, give or take. So you think this guy's well below that?
You should go play Joe a set, Nate. See
how I think Joe Rogan's above 600.
I think so too, yeah.
Yeah, I think
so. What do you
I personally, I mean, Just on what I expect from somebody who's a footballer, like the dart player, blah, blah, I would say this guy probably falls into a 550 Fargo, something like that, 500. Sure. At best, at absolute best.
And really, the point, Jim, I think that you're really trying to make, and that we probably shouldn't stray from, is that I don't care if the guy plays 700.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not going to draw any more attention to the event than, you know, the guy who didn't get the spot.
And can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Let's say
he ends up getting drawn against a qualifier or another wild card who turns out to be absolute pants as well, and somehow managed to get through some easy qualifier somewhere. Now they use this guy so they're going to put him on live TV. They're going to stick him out there. The drawing's been given is against another hacker who somehow managed to slip through the net and get through. And this goes on live TV with these two guys banging rails for 2 hours in a race to 9. Do you really think that's good for pool?
We have to assume, honestly, I think it is still good for pool.
Because then the next people come on and you see how good, like talented actually they actually are. I think it is good for pool.
I think we also have to take into account that the people in Matchroom know what they're doing. And if they put up this guy, that they have an idea behind it and they thought it through. I don't think they were like, oh my God, we're missing a player. Yeah, Troy D. So I think at some point I understand the idea of he's not going to do something, probably. I'm assuming
he's not there to win pool matches, Bob. But I completely understand the idea of having Troy Deeney there is not to be competitive pool player and to win pool matches. It's to attract another audience and attract another audience. What I'm saying is,
maybe
I don't really think that audience exists, and certainly does not exist outside of the UK. So as far as a world audience and creating a world audience and bringing people in, it's not going to work with Troy Deeney because nobody has a clue who he is.
Yeah.
I knew who he was.
I'll be back in a minute.
I still don't know who he is. We've been talking about him for 15 minutes.
He's a professional soccer player from England who's retired now. There, Nate.
Oh, he's not even active.
What?
He's not even active?
I don't think he's active now.
He's an actual pro pool player.
Yeah, he's a pro pool player now.
I think he, or is he active maybe in the lower regions, but not active anymore on the highest level at least.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe he dropped down a little bit. And he got some name recognition because he scored a very well-seen goal because it was a penalty kick for the other team. And then it got saved, and then they countered in 10 seconds, and he scored the winning goal in the 97th minute of a game or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
You can find it on YouTube. Press in Troy Deeney YouTube.
So he is basically the...
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. And apparently
Joe Rogan plays...
Not much.
You don't like
apparently
soccer,
Joe Rogan right? plays a lot better than I thought he did. I mean, I thought he played in the 600s. I didn't think he played that high.
Joe's pretty solid. He's taken lessons with like Max Eberle and a few other people in Vegas, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that, but
no. So obviously, if you had someone like a Joe Rogan or you had someone like a Manny Pacquiao then you're going to get eyeballs that you wouldn't have already got.
In an ideal world, you'd get Manny Pacquiao for like the Hanoi Open. Maybe you'd get Joe Rogan for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, right. Something like that. So that's that's the hook. Hey, listen, that's what it was with Judd Trump. That's what it was with Steve Davis, Alex Higgins, Jimmy White, and Ronnie O'Sullivan in the early days of the Moscone Cup.
Sure,
and it worked.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so they're not using an idea here that hasn't been proven to them.
Yeah, they're not using a wet noodle.
Yeah,
I'm just assuming that they know what they're doing, and that they took Troy Deeney for a reason. Maybe it's local coverage. Maybe it's a deal they had with Sky Sports, like because I think he's a pundit, also an analyst. Maybe they said, "Hey, take Troy," and then whatever the case may be, there will be a reasoning behind it.
Yeah, we'll show his highlights on Sky Sports Recap or whatever. Yeah,
and that also attracts him because on Sky he's somebody who the majority of sports fans will recognize. So maybe there's an angle.
They, The UK Open is coming up in what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, I mean,
I should know it.
Yeah, you're running a qualifier, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm running a qualifier tomorrow, so I should know it, but I don't. I'm checking my details tomorrow.
Yeah, it looks like May 7th through the 12th.
Yes, indeed. Correct. I have it here now. Correct. May 7th to the 12th. I got the documents to organize a US Open and a European Open yesterday. So, yeah.
This is the part, Mike, that bothers me. On, you know, like being on the outside, just waiting for the next chance I get to go. It's like so frustrating. So sit here and like, okay, I gotta wait.
Because there's no
U.S. demand right now for big qualifiers for any of the European tournaments, and that's one of the things I want to do is go out, play at least one of the majors in Europe this year. But now I fly to Europe to go play. Like, I have to go meet up with Bob and go play.
What they've
normally done in the past, haven't they normally had a couple of qualifiers at the event in the days leading up to an event for like six, eight spots, something like that? You know, if they do something like that, you can always take a flyer on that.
Sure.
Because then you can play multiple qualifiers over, you know, every day for 4 days. And
are they doing it now, though? I don't know. Because it would be announced.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things that haven't been announced yet that I think people would have liked to have had information on.
Well, there's for the UK Open, there's an amateur tournament that's happening just before, and the winners get a spot in the main tournament.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's great.
Do you only have one spot available in the UK before the Open?
I don't know how many spots it is.
Okay.
But it's an amateur event, and there is qualifying spots, I believe, for the UK Open. How many, I don't know.
I think
it will be multiple. I have four now. So
I think it's mostly spots and only one stripe, right? Is that correct? Sorry. Sorry.
Jim's still
Who's the mother?
Ray's been kicked off the podcast for bad jokes.
I'm a dad. I have dad jokes.
It's by numbers. I don't know how big the qualifying tournament, amateur tournament is, but they give tickets out based on participants. So.
Yeah. Okay.
From 32 to 63, it's four, I think. And it will change to two in the future, but initially they announced from 32 participants to 63, it's four tickets. And then as of 64 participants, it's eight tickets.
Okay.
Wow. So if you've got a field of 64, there's eight people that are going to get a ticket.
Yeah. Tomorrow I run the qualifier in Bolenzo. You've been, Jim, and I have four tickets, and it's a field of 38. So.
Well, eight for 64. That's good odds.
I'm on my way, pal. I'll be right there.
Come on down, sir.
I'll take the first British Airways red eye.
Got to win three matches, huh?
That's it.
Basically is what it comes down to.
I'm in.
Yeah, basically. If we had 64, but we don't. So
do you do that as a single elimination or do you do that as a double?
Single or double elimination, Bob?
Double.
So you got to win three matches if you stay on the A side.
Yeah, three matches if you stay on the A side. Yeah.
A bunch if you play on the B side.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah.
And it's an open draw as well, so get lucky with the draw.
That's the flip of the coin. If you get lucky with the draw, it's possible. If not, there's no seeding there. So.
The Wild West, baby, just like we like.
And are you? Is it open for everybody? Or are you only doing Belgian entrants?
No, open for everybody. So we have Albanians, French. Germans, they're our neighbors, Mike. Couple of guys of the UK also dropping by, so open for everyone.
You still taking signups?
Yeah, sure.
All right, sign me up. I'll be over in about 9 hours.
Got a non-stop flight out of Madison, do you?
Yeah.
Open until 9:59 tomorrow morning, our time. So it's about 8:35 in local.
So I guess you'll be doing qualifiers for the European Open as well when that comes around.
Yeah. I received a mail yesterday to sign up for organizing a qualifier for UK and Euro and US Open. Yeah.
Now, is part of the prize on yours, Bob, their entry fee into it, or do they just get a spot and they still have to pay their own way?
They just get a spot because I'm keeping the entry fee really low, as in 50 euros, so $50 basically. There are some qualifiers going around that are asking for a higher entry fee, but then they also use that entry fee just to give
to pay the entry and
stay or flight or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Because I'm so close, I chose to keep it very open and accessible and say, okay, 50 euros, you get a spot, but you take care of stay and transport. So
yeah, makes sense.
So that's the only thing. I had a question a lot though.
Yeah,
is
sure.
Is it stay included? Is it transport included?
First class airfare, hotel.
Yeah.
Only the WPA,
all inclusive.
The only thing that we're going to do, because we calculated it as such, because obviously from the entry fee, I pay the tickets. So the entry fee pays the $250 entry ticket. But with 64, the price pool was calculated as such that it was almost even Steven, because there's also something to match room and then our expenses and such. But now that we are less, we're going to have actually more money to spend,
right?
So I'm gonna also give some prize money.
Good.
So then as it like a sort of spending money or something like that.
Sure.
So I hope the players will be happy with that.
I'll take first place and two waffles.
You can take a semi-final spot and some Brussels sprouts. What do you think?
Candy Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
I don't know what else we got to talk about.
Well, Jason snapped off the
Jason
Expo,
yeah.
And
the Expo
tournament as a Jay Flowers pool player. So, I guess that trip down to the Legends of Pocket Billiards Fast Straight Pool run kind of gave him enough time to figure the equipment out and put it to good use. He looked good.
560.
That seems to be his go-to to get sharp and to get in stroke.
Yeah,
worked for the Moscone Cup last year too.
I mean, it keeps him on the table for like 12 hours a day, and it just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he just gets into the motor and gets so immersed. You know, it's like you just dive right in and see how many balls you can run. And you know, it's, you know, plus you have a purpose trying to snap off your record. 560 is pretty incredible. You know, it's a pretty high run.
Well, and beat the record that has been in place for 60 years prior, 50 years, whatever it was, before John beat it.
Yeah, it's the third time it's been cracked now since John did it. You know, so it's pretty strong.
Yeah.
Didn't Jason have like a 530 too?
John?
Huh?
Yeah.
Didn't Jason on his way to 714 also have like a 530 something?
No, yeah. he's only been over the 526 twice.
Yeah.
Okay,
so this is the second time. Okay.
He had a high run.
Yeah, 508.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still unbelievable. It's great.
So, Raymond, what did you think about the format there with the reaching the final 16 and then having undefeated players play each other and single loss players playing each other?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of goofy, I think. It leads to it's kind of like you can almost lose a match on purpose to avoid, you know.
Exactly.
But then you lose money.
No, you don't, because you still keep going through.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you win your match, but if you were from the winner's side and lost your opening match versus if you were from the B side and lost a match, the person who lost, it's $1,000 difference.
$1,000. Okay, but what happens if you get to the winner's qualification and you see that if you win through the winner's qualification, you're going to get probably filler. or you can lose the winner's qualification, play a lower rank than the loser's qualification, and then be in the loser's bracket against maybe three other.
I mean, it depends. It depends who you get.
You take that risk.
Yeah, that's again,
it depends on who you get.
I'm saying you'd be stupid not to think players are looking at it and going, is it in my benefit to take the risk here?
Sure.
Well, no, allegedly, Jason said that he kind of took a flyer, you know, just played flyers against, who did he lose to?
BJ?
Yeah.
Well, BJ played really well on him, too.
Yeah, so he did play really well, but Jason kind of said that listen, playing in the loser, being in the loser's bracket was not going to be the worst thing that ever happened to him, so he played with that in the back of his mind.
Yeah.
So no, I think it did affect his focus on winning that match.
Yeah, it's definitely a strategy, you know what I mean, that can be employed. And it's only because you have control of that, you can say, well, if I, you know, lose this match, then I can go over here and play, you know, play great, you know, play.
Yeah. I would not insinuate that he dumped, that he lost on purpose. I'm just saying that did have to play a little bit with his focus in that match was – you know, yeah. I'm not going to be as disappointed missing this ball as I might have been if I was going to lose a spot in the final 16.
I think
not saying that anybody dumped, but what it does is the system gives the possibility.
It's just lazy.
The system gives the possibility, the system's wrong.
Yeah. This is a card that you can play. It's just a card that you can play. Yeah. It's a tactic,
right.
And it's there. You know, Jason went on to win the tournament, so it worked. You know, it worked out to his favor, maybe. But I will say. Yeah, I think the Expo is close to being like a really great tournament in the United States. Right now, it's just a good tournament because you're dealing with certain things that, you know, you probably would say are like unorthodox or a little goofy. So, like that format thing with the no redraw into the final 16, I think is kind of silly. You should just redraw into second stage and whatever happens, single elimination.
That tournament has not been a really great tournament for a long time.
Yeah,
this is the best it's been in a decade.
In a while. Right? And
so you know,
that's a thing. I think you shouldn't really be you shouldn't be considered a matchroom ranking event if you're going to use a triangle rack. It's just too laborsome to get the balls touched up and proper. And guys train all year to work on the break and discover the break, and then you basically neutralize it. You turn it into a crapshoot.
Yeah. At some point, Matchroom's going to have to set hard and fast rules. I just think that they let's get the bigger piece of the picture fine-tuned before we come back to this part. So I understand it, but they're not going to be able to go too much further without having to set hard and fast rules, even if they end up losing some qualifiers next year or smaller points events next year.
I think this will be the last year.
You're getting big enough to the point where you kind of have to do that next year.
I think
Matchroom are kind of in a position where they have all these events that carry Matchroom ranking points, but they don't yet know how many or even any or which one of them they're going to keep. So there's no point in setting all these rules just now if they're just going to say next year or the year after, you know what, we have enough of our own tournaments for our tour. We're not giving you ranking points anymore, you know?
Because for like somebody like me, it's like I would rather spend more money and go to just the majors because if I just know that these things are going to be in place, there's no nonsense, I don't got to worry about when the draw is going to be done, what time things, whether it's going to be a Calcutta or not, that doesn't matter, that I'm not interested in anyways, like whether or not they're going to use a triangle rack, whether they're going to have some goofy break rule, like all these things that they're tiresome. It's unprofessional. I'd rather just go to the bigger tournaments and save myself the headache and the time and the money and, you know, then have to deal with like shenanigans. You know what I mean?
Well, if they have a match or major every month, then they don't need all the rest of these tournaments. But these tournaments are still useful for building up a ranking for people to join the main tour.
That's why, getting it out there.
I don't think they'll go away, period. Because
no, but they'll go away as a professional.
Because they're too important in building up the others. They're too important in each continent for allowing people who can't take a flyer on 11 majors in 7 different countries to be able to go to all of them. So you have to be able to allow players to build up their points, build up their purse, build up whatever. So I think that the continental / regional ranking tournaments are always going to be part of the system. I just think they need to get their arms around them more.
They won't hold enough weight for the pros, for people like Jason to continue to play them if they've got a major every single month.
But that's the end goal, right? That's the end goal.
Exactly. Yeah, these tournaments are for more players to try and qualify.
Yeah. The end goal is that Jason only plays 12 of tournaments.
Exactly. You start talking about 2025 having a queue school for people to qualify for the 128. That's where these tournaments will have a place.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Jason, players like Jason and Darren will still go to this event anyways because they're there for their booth on the side. They're there to make money and play the event as a side gig.
Possibly.
I mean, the booth that they have set up, I mean, that's what they're
doing. And being Q school events, would they be allowed to play?
If it's a Q school, then no, they wouldn't be allowed to play.
So it depends on what they're looking at as the future of events like this.
But then the promoters have to agree to that as well.
Right.
You think that Super Billiards Expo ever has a chance of being a part of Q school, Mike?
I don't think it has a chance to be a Matchroom major, so
yeah,
it's gonna fall wherever Matchroom decides these events are going to be categorized as going forward.
Yeah.
The only difference is in 1 or 2 years they will say, "Look, it's our way or the highway. No more wooden racks. No more this. No more that." With the qualifiers, we already have a hard set of rules, pocket size and all.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense, right? You know,
you should qualify based on the material and the rules that you're going to be playing in the main tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried to qualify for a Chinese 8-ball tournament and I turned up at the event and found out it was played on normal 9-foot tables with 5-inch pockets. I'm qualifying for a Chinese 8-ball tournament here.
That doesn't make sense.
No.
No, I think as of next year they will fix that. I think. Did you guys already had a pod about the Whirlpool Masters and everything, or
we haven't talked about it?
I think we'll do a separate one for that. Hey, we'll do a Masters build up for that one, I guess.
Yeah, we could talk about the Masters. I think next week. This covered most of the stuff. I mean, we've been gone for a long time. I want to apologize to everybody out there. I haven't been doing them. I've been traveling like crazy. I was at the PLP, and then I had the Wisconsin State Tournament, and then I was home for a few days, and then I was just at the Super Billiards Expo. So I've been all over the place.
Nate, what did you do? What did you do? What was the result?
Give us some of the juicy goss from the Billiards Expo. Who got drunk and committed some crimes or anything like that? That would be Nate.
That would be Nate. Yeah, you don't have to look very far for that.
They answered all your questions when it comes to drinking.
It definitely looks like Shane proved he can play super high level in short races. So there's that.
Yeah, especially when longevity comes into it. That's a lot of pool, man. Those days are long.
The guy is scarily in good shape, you know. It's almost like he's sneakily in good shape to be able to do that, you know.
He
runs quite a bit when he's gearing up. He jogs and runs and stuff.
I did think it was interesting to look at. You know, I did take a look for the BD Live show, a look at the PLP in terms of, because it was races to five, short race to five, and all that stuff. Americans versus your Team USA players versus Team Europe players. Over the course of that event. And it was really, it was pretty interesting. It was the U.S. ended up winning, I think they went 16-12. And Europe actually had a losing record.
Yeah, but you've got to remember that is with the three Americans that are actually good at Moscone Cup.
Yeah, well, but all five European players were in it, so they were playing.
Yeah, okay, but you didn't have the other, you for it to be a proper balance, you need another two Americans in there.
That's exactly. If you're looking at Shane, doesn't play well in this format against these types of guys. You know, he went 8-2. So you know, so if you're looking to pull something out of it that you could get some hope for, there was something in there that was like, okay, well, you know, they showed up and they played pretty well against Team mm-hmm. Europe, and really, you know, it was just kind of a different way to look at that event.
But it's individual. That's the difference. It's an individual. PLP is individual, not the team format. That's the
well, historically, actually, the U.S. has
well,
done
still, it's still Shane against Josh in a race to five. It's Shane against Jason in a race to five. It's Sky against David Alcaid in a race to five. You know, that's where you look for the commonality.
Yeah.
And so I would like to know. It was just
still
a fun,
difference.
It was just a fun little exercise to kind of go through.
Yeah, for sure.
So now America, our favorite from a Moscone Cup.
Hands down. We're going to play with three guys.
If they listen to Raymond's.
I'm happy to bet on the underdog. That's okay.
Just wait. When I drop a 15-foot alligator in their locker room, okay? Just, they're going to be welcome to Florida proper, I promise. Yeah.
Just keep in mind that three players are switching equipment within a couple of weeks of that event, and two of the three were European. Between Jason and David switching equipment, Fedor obviously was switching equipment too, but
that like the week before.
come Moscone Cup, I think that the players are going to be a little bit more in tune. And if the European players aren't in tune with their equipment, guess what? They're not going to make the team. Where those players on the U.S. side are playing it no matter what, even if they're not in tune with their equipment yet.
Yeah, I feel like probably. I mean, Jason's probably proved that he's made the turn, you know, with his new gear. Obviously, winning a ranking event is
already on the team. You don't have to worry about it.
Right, but just as far as like you look at vulnerability, you know, for the guys that are there, David looks very vulnerable. I don't really see him. He might have like last season where he made like a late season kind of lock in and like won a couple tournaments and got going, but he's probably going to need something like that. But I see a lot of the young guys that are coming strong for Europe probably have a new guy on the roster, and it's probably David's spot that's
I would say at least one. Yeah.
At least one.
Yeah.
There's too many guys that are just
pushing. I don't know that FSR makes it. He hasn't looked anything close to what he looked like 2 years ago.
Well, the biggest decider is going to be whether Jason makes it as a points player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch out for Moritz. Moritz.
At the end of the day, we're going to know mid-June, probably at least three players on the European team mid-June after the World Championships is finished.
One player makes the World Championship and it's over. Yeah,
exactly. If you get two Europeans in the last four of the World Championships, that's three of your players. Those two and Jason.
Final four is going to be four Asians, so don't worry about it.
Not one.
All Americans.
All Americans. Great.
Raymond's going to win. Raymond's going to be final four.
For what?
More importantly, that would be awesome.
I need a spot.
More importantly, where are we going out in Florida? My preparation so far from Moscone Cup has been watching the series Florida Man, and I'm really excited about going to Florida because apparently it's just full of stupid people.
There's an Instagram page you should follow by the same name, at Florida Man. Go follow. Yeah.
So have you ever played the Florida Man birthday game, Mark or Jim?
No, but I think I might be playing it when I've had a beer.
You put so here we'll do yours. When's your birthday?
22nd of May.
So May 22nd. What you do is you put in your birthday and then you type in Florida Man and then you just read the headlines. Yours are man arrested after telling. Wait, let's go. Get out of here. Man arrested after telling playground where babies come from.
After telling playground where babies come from.
Yep.
Is that even English?
Yeah, I'm kind of.
A Florida man climbs playground equipment, allegedly yells to children about how babies are born.
Good thing. See, I can't wait to go to Florida. Sounds brilliant.
Let's see. There's got to be another one around here. What's another one around here?
Just like Wales.
So, Florida man loses his arm after a gator attack behind a bar.
Sounds like something that could happen.
It happens.
It does. Florida's that place.
Yeah.
All right. I got a blast.
Stuff in here.
Yeah.
Wait. We got to do yours. We got to do yours, Mike. Yours was yesterday, right? So, April.
It wasn't yesterday, Mike.
Florida man. Florida man accused of using. Whoa, this might be a dark one. Florida man accused of using children to roam the streets to collect money for fake nonprofit.
Get your Billions Digest, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. Yeah. Advertising sales are down. I'm having to hit the street.
Seems like an awesome spot, you guys. Seems like,
Florida man gets drunk at Disney Springs and warns police that they better hope he is never their nurse. Return of the Jedi, returning to theaters, and more.
Good. Thank you.
Good. Right.
All right.
That's Florida man.
Nice. I'll see you.
Good stuff. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.